My name is Roger Gwizdowski. I'm the principal investigator of the Puritan Tiger Beetle Recovery Project out of the Silvio Oconte National Wildlife Refuge.
My name is Laura Saucier. I'm a wildlife biologist with the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Where exactly are we right now?
We are on an undisclosed island in the Southern Connecticut River. We're sitting right on the small patch of habitat we created to reintroduce over 300 lab-reared larvae to the site last year. It's of concern because we really only have one population of this species left in New England.
So is it considered an endangered species?
It's considered an endangered species by the states. Federally, it's a threatened species. It's currently under review about its status. Most of us that work on it seems that we think it probably will become endangered as an official status, but it's currently threatened.
What exactly is a tiger beetle? What would differentiate it from other types of beetles?
Its viciousness. So they're called tiger beetles because they're relatively solitary hunters, and they are vicious predators, both as larvae and as adults. So they have very stout bodies, long legs, big eyes, huge jaws, and they'll look for their prey at a distance, run right into it, slice into the body walls with their giant jaws, incapacitate their prey so they're just immobile, and then eat them while they're alive. So a tiger beetle is vicious.
How could a thing so vicious, so clearly good at getting food, how could it become so endangered?
They're small. So they're vicious for their size. You know, they're about a little less than half an inch long, and they seem to have very restrictive habitat requirements, at least here in New England. So even though it's a small thing, it's the top predator in its environment here. It's part of a much larger ecosystem.
What is it that Puritan tiger beetles eat, and is that one of the things that you're looking for, the appropriate prey for this species?
Well, having built them up to be so vicious, they do, in fact, eat anything they can catch, and so that's mostly something that's about the same size that they are or smaller. And that's the prevailing, I think, thought for most tiger beetle species, but when we've got situations where we've got rare populations like the Puritan tiger beetle, and they're only found in these restricted places, that forms our questions about, you know, well, what exactly are they eating, or what could they be eating? And it could be that there's something that's present on those few sites that's not on the others, and they're so small and they're in such a remote place, we've developed tools to start to look carefully.
In a place like Connecticut that's very populated, that has a whole lot of pressure from humans, is it just harder to find connected habitat for species like these?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, humans are, we are all part of our environment, and I'm not saying that humans don't belong where we are, but we certainly modify our environment at a quicker pace than I think many species can keep up with. And I think that may be the case with this species. You know, the 1950s, the floods that happened, you know, dams were built higher up. In the watersheds, which, you know, you have changes in flow regime there. You have changes in sediments that are being washed downstream and replenishing these areas. Things, we change our environment very quickly.
When students ask this question, I often launch and ask them if they know what a metapopulation is. Right. And when they don't, I get electrically excited because I say it's so quick and so simple and so important. And the idea is, you know, if you have one population, it's just one group. They're isolated. But if you have a metapopulation, this is a population of populations, and they're spread across space and time so that, you know, as you might imagine, any one year, it's a little drier, it's a little wetter, things are better. And so some populations will go down in numbers, some populations will go up in numbers. But when you spread that across a really large place, you know, like the Connecticut River drainage, you know, that's a lot of populations across space and time. So, you know, if you get a storm in southern Connecticut and wipes out a few populations down there, that's not a problem because beetles from up north will eventually move down to colonize that. And by eventually, I usually mean on 50-100 year timescales. And so the central problem we have now is that there's no possibility for connectivity amid, even if we created new habitats upstream. And I think the fate of the Puritan tiger beetle is to live in a human-mediated metapopulation.
Is the long-term goal to create the type of connectivity that allows a species like this to live up and down the river and create that metapopulation? Or is the long-term goal really just to sustain these smaller populations that you're helping to create, because that's, at this point, the best we can do?
The wonderful longer-term goal would be, yes, we have enough healthy river habitat, you know, up and down the river that would allow for free connectivity or free movement of not just purine tiger beetles, but all the species that are living in these habitats. But I think practically, like I mentioned, I think we're going to end up, our best case scenario that I can imagine is a number of stable but geographically very isolated populations.
So this is always a hard question for people who've devoted a lot of their time in research to something, but why does this matter to me or to somebody who's listening to this who frankly thinks that there's enough beetles in the world, and if this one beetle were to go away, it wouldn't really matter all that much? What do you tell those people?
Well, matter to who? I think, I think I take a very practical view. I think when most folks ask me that question, you know, what will it matter? I'll say, will it matter to who? Will it matter to us? And my answer immediately is no, because it's gone extinct for most of the river, and it hasn't mattered in a way that we've noticed. On the other hand, you know, most of life on Earth we don't know very much about. And so, you know, the idea that because we don't know about something means it's not important, I think is a powerfully naive concept.
My opinion is always, yeah, I think it's very egotistical for us to think that we know what the ramifications are for losing species, losing our biological diversity here in Connecticut. I think it's worthy of protection. It's a beautiful animal. And certainly there are steps that we can do. It's not something where we can just throw our hands up in the air and go, I don't know what we can do. Well, we know what we can do. We can study the animal. We can find habitat patches that are appropriate quality. We can do our best to try and get those animals to there. There are very practical, common sense things that we can do to try and keep this animal here.
Is there an argument that you make if you're searching for funding, or if you're talking to someone, you know, at the state who wonders, you know, should we be spending all this time or money trying to save this particular beetle? Is there something that you say that says, yeah, this is a species that is indicative of something, or this is a species that's incredibly important to the ecosystem? I mean, what's the pitch?
The pitch is they're part of a healthy river. I mean, wherever we see purine tiger beetles, we see a whole suite of species that were native, they're healthy, they're abundant. And I think for the audience, the individual that can handle the existential shock, I will stare them in the eyes pleasantly, and I will say, well, what good are you?
You're a lot of fun to bring to parties.
It'd be a blast. Yeah, I think it's a great question when people. I like when people ask.
And I don't, because it's that values based question that sometimes it's hard to find that thread that will connect a small beetle that lives on a beach on the Connecticut River to people's everyday lives. It's hard to draw that, but I feel very strongly that it's important. We're all rallying behind this one beetle. We're working on science. We're trying to save a species, trying to keep the habitat healthy. Just want to break out into kumbaya right now.
And you were showing me pictures before. It's a beautiful insect. It's a beautiful little thing.
I think so. I think it's gorgeous.
Describe what it looks like.
It is a bronzy colored beetle, about a half an inch or so, and has beautiful white decorations, for better word, on its wings. Gorgeous.
Would you like to go find some?
If we look off in the distance, Chris and Neil are just finishing their survey, so we won't disturb them. But if we head off, they'll show us some.
Yeah, but we do need help with an ID here.
Okay. Oh, man. All right. That is cool. That is cool.
Take a leg or two.
Oh, I got him.
Got it?
Got him. That is fantastic. I wish I knew if this were really ours. I expect it is, right? That is fantastic. So, I should describe. So, Chris Davis has just handed me an adult female Puritan tiger beetle. It's one he found in the recent survey, and we are all fairly certain that this beetle was with us here on the beach last year, has spent the winter as a larvae, has pupated this spring, and now has emerged as an adult. And you can see her here. She is not happy that she's between my fingers. She's biting. She's using her jaws to bite into my skin. She is puking up a bit of defensive liquid that they regurgitate. So we're only going to hold on to her for another moment or so.
And then what do you do? Do you just release her?
We'll just release her. We'll set her right down in the sand. She'll either run or fly away the moment we let her go, and then she'll be on her beetly way. So I'm going to let her go. I'm just going to bring her down to the sand, set her down, and I think she's still biting my finger. She really wants to go. There she goes. She's going to sit on my finger for just a moment, kind of get her bearings. Nope, she's cleaning her antenna, and there she goes. She just ran off my hand, and she's flown off. This is a definite measure of success. It is about as small a measure as we could ask, but this is the, as far as we know, the first reintroduced tiger beetle which is successfully pupated on site. That was delightful. Thank you, Chris.
So you're very happy about this?
Absolutely. You know, this is it's one small mark that's part of, you know, a lot of efforts. Behind that beetle is a team of at least 30 people. State and federal wildlife biologists, students, academics, volunteers, artists, who have all been helping this project for the last few years to get these beetles on the beach.
We found one!